Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Behind the glass, as always, Matt Neely, keeping me on time and target. And I guess that's kind of an appropriate terminology maybe for today.
Yeah.
We'll get into a lot of different things.
We're not going to be flying 37 hours today, Ted, are we?
No, we're not.
All right.
And I'll tell you, that is really, when you look at what the B-2 does with those long time frames and the amount of hours they can fly and the fact that they took off and landed at Whiteman, I mean, it's really is an amazing weapon system. And And it's very, serves an incredible purpose to our country when we need it, no doubt. Speaking of purposes, this is the engagement hour, and big part of our purpose is to get you involved. We are a nation bound by shared values of freedoms, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country. For others, it's in service to our community. Could be in various ways, shapes, or forms. So I went back to that intro, Matt, just because it's one that we used a lot when we first started doing the Engagement Hour and the Civic Engagement Hour program. And it's as important today as it is ever. It's important for all of us to remember that we do live, and I feel very strongly about this, in the greatest country in the world. We have the most opportunity. There's a reason people are beating down our doors trying to get to our country, and that's for freedom, for democracy, and for opportunity.
Indeed.
And that's what we've got. And there are some responsibilities we've got to give back. So as everything's been playing out, there's been obviously a lot of discussion, right, wrong, indifferent, what you want. Everybody's got different opinions. But I do believe it's always important to make sure we focus on what we can do to make our communities better, and then to have civil engagement on these issues. I can discuss all day with somebody, right or wrong, if they think that that's action we should have taken. But what I can tell you, having served a lot of time in the military and been into that part of the world for a long time, Iran is a disruptor. They're one of the most known terrorist states. The idea of them actually succeeding at someday and having a nuclear weapon, to me, is absolutely an unacceptable item. So whether this was the right time, it was the right place, we can have those arguments. And I'm just hoping that what's taken place and what's gone forward will hold. I know last night, you know, going to sleep, I think we were probably feeling a little bit more enthusiastic. The president announced that there was a ceasefire between the two MDs.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And now we wake up this morning a little bit more, and obviously we've got one pretty upset president about it too. So I do believe the next 24 to 48 hours will hold a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of faith and trust. There's been a lot of things going on over there for, like I said, decades, and it always comes around to people backing off on their agreements.
Two things that come to mind. First of all, I think it was Fox, but I was watching some news channel over the weekend on Saturday after the strike, and they did a scroll of all of the attacks by Iran and their proxies, starting with the embassy takeover in 1979. And it was a long, long list. And many of them were terrorist actions, right? A long list that involved many casualties over 46 years, Ted. So that's the first thing. And this is, their proxies are, you know, Hezbollah and Hamas. And, you know, you go on and on, right? So,
absolutely.
So they've been orchestrating this for a long time, even, and of course, as we send them plane loads of U.S. currency, you know, cargo, Air Force cargo planes full of U.S. currency, well, that's just been funding this. The second thing that came to mind is, you look at what terrorists have been doing, especially in the Middle East, especially over the last 5 years, the attacks on civilians. The United States attacked nuclear facilities that were set up not to make energy-grade uranium, but to make weapons-grade uranium, okay? So they were enriching uranium far beyond what they needed to use for energy, as they stated. I'm doing the air quotes with my hands for the folks on the radio, that they stated.
We need to get a camera in on you too, Matt.
They were going to use that. I could turn that on, I guess. But but anyway, so that's the thing. But you look at what the U.S. did, a pinpoint strike on the facilities that they've been told that they said that they weren't doing, what they were doing anyway. So it was like, but you look at, and I'm going to look at any sort of attack coming back from them, if this doesn't hold, or through one of their proxies, at a public event or a parade or some sort of act of terrorism. That's the difference. That's the difference between what the U.S. did on Saturday and what's been coming at the U.S. and its allies for decades.
And that's a great point on that front. Everybody's asked me, oh, are you worried? You know, we were talking about it in the office. Is that war going to break out? Well, war in the U.S., from the Iranians' perspective, is going to be different. It's going to be exactly what you say. It's going to be soft targets. It's going to be acts of terrorism. It's going to be things. If you look back, you know, can't necessarily say the Iranians were directly tied to 9/11. There was so much more with the you know, bin Laden, the Saudis. There's just a ton of things in there. But don't fool yourself and don't think the Iranians are behind in funding a lot of that. That's what they've historically done. So Ted's opinion, personal opinion, nobody else's, is I think keeping and preventing the Iranians from getting a nuclear weapon is critical. And the fact of the matter is they have not participated in conjunction with the international atomic organizations that, like they said they would, even they were not complying with the old agreements. You know, a lot of people are saying President Trump pulled out of that one. That's what led to this. They weren't complying.
Right.
And there's a reason you put something 300 feet or more underground in a hardened bunker.
Yep.
And whether the bunker, but you know, the MOP weapons got there or not, it's irrelevant. What's been happened is the process has been slowed down at a minimum. Mm-hmm. It'd be very difficult. You just look at the pictures, you look at everything else, unless they got a lot of that uranium out, or they're going to go to another country. I mean, don't fool yourself. They went and talked to Russia. There's going to be a lot of ways. And yes, there are a lot of countries, people go, well, why do we let them have nuclear weapons? Well, because once you have one, it's very difficult to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
So the option that we're trying to do in this world is prevent. And I think this is both for the two, you know, the Soviets and the Americans. None of us see any benefit from more countries having nuclear weapons. I think we would all agree on that. So you've got to do what you can to prevent it. And Iran is the one country in that region that I would not want to have it. And Pakistan's
right.
Got it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not it's very clear in my mind.
Right.
So, Matt, I want to cut to a break early today because we've got a really good lineup coming to us. Congressman wants us. Come on, he's going to be calling in any minute. I want to be able to get every minute he can because he is in the middle of appropriations now on top of everything else going on. We're going to be joined by State Senator Vince Leach to tell us about the budget and where all that stands, as well as many other things. And then we'll close today with the lap final hour with Republican Pima County Republican Chairwoman Kathleen Wynne, also the host of Wynne Tucson. So stay with us today. I think we're going to have a good political discussion, and Matt and I will fill in all the gaps when we've got some dead air on our thoughts on what's going on. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different areas of content, but always interesting talk radio. So I strongly encourage you to join us every day of the week.
And a little get-together on Thursday night at Casa del Rio, 5:30, over 22nd and Pantano. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to see you there. Casa del Rio, 5:30, Thursday night. The Morning Voice eat and greet, as Dr. Ackerley likes to refer to them.
He does like those to be the eat and greets. He does a great job of picking different places throughout the community for everybody to come meet the various hosts. Lydia Aranda, who hosts Monday's Rainmakers, Grant Kruger, Wednesday full of food for thought, and that's a combination of good foodie. And I guarantee you, with Grant, you're going to get plenty of politics as well. Tom Moulton on Thursdays telling you all about the activities and the attraction areas of attraction here in Tucson and the greater Pima County region. And then Ed Ackerley closes on Friday with highlighting business success stories in the region, but also giving you the wonder of the University of Arizona. So strongly encourage you to listen every day. Yes, five of us, five different perspectives, but always good talk radio.
Five hosts equals an informed listener, I say.
That we've got that going. Well, let me know when Congressman Ciscomani joins us. We're hoping he can break away. Interesting enough, he's in the middle of appropriations, which basically takes up about 14 hours of his day trying to get through all this stuff. And he's been working long days and nights. And it's not like there's anything else other than probes to talk about. But hopefully Congressman Ciscomani will be able to join us. So there was something that went under the radar that a lot of people may not have recognized. We all know water's a huge issue here. There was a big discussion last week on Project Blue, a project here to bring a data center to Tucson. And everybody was focused around water and energy. I believe you talk to a lot of the water wonks, they'll tell you the water side of it's been kind of is kind of addressed. But the news last week that happened that really should have taken Arizona by surprise, and I think it's a positive sign, was last week President Trump named Ted Cook the new leader of the Bureau of Reclamation.
Okay.
The Bureau of Reclamation directly deals with the Colorado River Basin. And that is where the big issue is. And in a little over a year, unless the upper basin, so that's the four upper basin states, New Mexico, make sure I get these right, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, I believe, are the four upper basin states. And then the three lower basin states are Nevada, Arizona, and California. The challenge we've got is we get almost all of our water, from Lake Mead after it's come down through Lake Powell, and negotiating the new CAP agreement is critical in the coming months. So I'm going to leave you with that as a tease. I'll give you the news that was announced that President Trump made after we get back, because we are joined right now by Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Congressman, good morning, and how are you doing?
Hey, Ted, good morning. Thank you, and I'm sorry I'm a little late up. This is appropriation season, and we've got these 14 to 18 hour markups that are sometimes hard to get a little break from. But happy to step out and chat with you for a little bit.
I appreciate it, Congressman, and we'll take you for as long as you can down to the bottom hour. I want to start, though, before we talk about APROPS, and I do want to talk about APROPS and what you're going on there, is I want to give you an opportunity to kind of comment on what your current perspective of what occurred in Iran and the state of a potential ceasefire, if we can get it to hold.
Yeah, so the big topic, big thing over the weekend, more than I think anyone can realize, that the buildup for it was there. It was definitely evident. The president was asked about this multiple times. He definitely didn't disclose anything about the strategy, but the world knew what the president was thinking, where his head was on this, where it needed to be. And I'm sure that the more the hours and the minutes passed, the more intel that he received on those briefings to make the critical decision that he did to launch the activities over the weekend to end Iran's nuclear capability. And listen, you're a military man, and you've been around this circle for a long time. Said that those briefings, that information that the top officials received, in this case, obviously the president, is very telling. And the evidence was there and clear of how close Iran was to acquire nuclear weapons, something that we just are not able to stand by and allow. Iran has been very clear on their intentions towards America, calling us the big Satan, also chanting death to America. And then there's a list of different instances where this regime in Iran has been hostile towards American soldiers, even and causing and killing many of our soldiers as well. So there's no room for interpretation on their intentions towards the United States and what we needed to do and intervene to make sure that they didn't take it to the next level. I was at a retreat actually over the weekend, where Vice President Vance spoke, and he talked about this. This is in the evening on Friday, so just before things unfolded. But he was describing the change that happens and the negotiations with a nation and how you even see them before they acquire nuclear capabilities and then afterwards. And this government in Iran is not one that you want to be having to negotiate as an equal when it comes down to war capabilities because of their nuclear acquirement. So that's something that we couldn't allow, especially, like I said, because they had made their intentions very clear towards us specifically. and that's where the actions took place. Now, a lot of criticism happened at that time, a lot of praise as well. So mixed feelings. I would say that the majority of the feedback that I received was positive towards what we did, even if people didn't prefer that approach, which many of us, obviously, we'd rather not have war. We want peace, but knew that it was a necessary step. And then, of course, just a few days later, when the ceasefire negotiations are looking very, very palpable and very possible, is when we're seeing the positive impact of what the president did. So I stood behind this decision when it first happened on Friday evening and Saturday evening, I'm sorry, and then I stand behind them today as well.
Yeah, Congressman, early in the show, I made very similar comments with regards to the need to prevent Iran, or for that matter, any other country in the world from gaining nuclear weapons. I think it's something that will just put the potential use more becoming a reality. And Iran is definitely not the country, particularly under their current regime, but honestly, under any regime, that I would want to have that capability. As you mentioned, there's been a lot of people, even inside Congress. It's been kind of different to see some of your Republican seatmates speak up against the president. What's the sense on the floor right now regarding the position the party should be in? I know the president's got more support than not, but there are a lot of people coming out vocal that he's not living to, even within the party, not living to what they believe the America First policy should be.
Well, yeah. Like I said, there are different opinions on this of what he should have done then. But I think as we move closer to a resolution in the ceasefire agreement, I think people are going to realize why that step was necessary. And leadership at any level, definitely at the highest level there is in this world, which is the United States president, you make decisions with information that you have at the time and that you make it on behalf of your entire nation. And that's what the president did. And not always, you're not always going to be understood immediately for that until the evidence becomes clear. And I think as more time goes by, more people are realizing how necessary that was, even if the knee-jerk reaction was that they didn't accept it. And there's fear of X, Y, and Z. But when they see the opposite happening and actually peace being acquired rather than an escalation, we saw a counter by Iran that even the president himself, I think, he called something that was weak. So they didn't technically escalate anything beyond what had happened before. So you look at all these things that are happening, and that's what's winning some people over that were initially skeptical of the actions and wanted a different result. And like I said, listen, is this the preferred avenue for everyone? No, including the president. He gave multiple warnings on saying, dismantle and take the steps, or else we're going to have to take action. And that was repeated over and over and over again by Secretary Rubio and by Vice President Vance and obviously President Trump. So the warnings were there, and this was not the first option, but it was a necessary, very necessary step that I stand behind, like I said.
And Juan, I think you hit one thing right on the head, and that is the success. If we can put an end to the Israeli-Iran conflict in its current state, people's attitudes will change. I think one thing the president has been clear is he doesn't want escalation. I think Iran did something so they could tell their people. They responded, but again, as a lot of people have noticed, they gave Qatar warning, and there was no real damage. We had moved a lot of our planes out of there, and no one died, but Iran was able to say we struck back with the same number of missiles fired as the bombs they dropped. So it's kind of a, tit for a tat. But I do believe as long as this ceasefire can hold, people will start to say, wow, that was really actually pretty effective. And it deterred and put a detriment on the nuclear program and goals of Iran.
Yeah, because, again, Iran poses a threat definitely to us, and that's the main priority of our actions against Iran, and what kind of threat and actions they would want to take against America. But obviously the world is a better place with Iran not having nuclear weapons. So it does bring a needed peace between those two specific countries in terms of Israel and Iran, but also in that entire region. And like I said, this is what strength looks like. And we want peace, but we also have the power to get to peace in the way that we need to. And this was this was what was necessary. Again, conversations didn't lead anywhere. This wasn't the time for just one more sanction, which I have supported the sanctions, but that wasn't going to get anywhere due to the how advanced their technology was on this already, due to failed policies in the past on enriching them in different ways. And they never listened, and they kept lying to us and lying to everybody else about what they were doing with the resources and the money that was awarded to them. So it was the right time to do that, and we did it, and here we are.
Absolutely. Peace through strength's a great way to turn the thing. So, Congressman, we've got just about a minute left. You're caught up in appropriations, like you said, 14, 18 hours. Can you just kind of explain in this final minute what how this appropriations plays to the current reconciliation, or are you already working on next year?
Well, reconciliation is over in the Senate right now, and they're working on that. They're working on getting us a bill back, but we're monitoring what they're working on that side. We can get a bill back that goes completely against what we had passed, specifically in the areas of protecting Medicaid. And also they toyed with an idea of selling federal lands and all kinds of things that we're still working with them, you know, behind the scenes and through meetings with senators to make sure that the bill doesn't come back in the way that we don't want it. And then we add appropriations that's the normal process, and I can talk about that next time I see the music playing. So I'll wrap it up, but Ted, always good to be on with you, and I look forward to being on again.
And Congressman, I greatly appreciate you joining us. That's Congressman Juan Ciscomani representing Arizona's 6th Congressional District, and thank you for all you do back there. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll see you when we come back.
You can follow along with us. We're streaming on YouTube at 1030 The Voice and on Facebook on our channel, 1030 The Voice. The Morning Voice will be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. That's Matt Neely. Matt, I don't know if you just read my mind, but I love the Tom Petty lineup this morning.
Hey, all right. There you go.
I really needed that. And a quick shout out to Marianne. I appreciate the fact that you like our lineup. I think it's going to be full of some good, interesting, and maybe even a little controversial conversation at times. So,
and she's watching on Facebook. 1030 The Voice is the channel. You can go to YouTube, and 1030 The Voice is the channel on YouTube as well. And well, you can watch the show on either of those places or listen on your favorite AM radio.
There you go, making sure everybody knows where to get us. But Matt, I'll tell you what I figured out I need to do is I'm a coffee drinker. I drink coffee throughout the show. I got to start bringing in a mug. This white cup just doesn't cut it. Maybe I'll bring in my American Warrior radio cup as a tip to BBG in that. And I want to right now tell you, if you like it, listening to Matt Neely a couple weeks ago when he sat in on me, next Tuesday, Matt Neely will be the guest host for The Morning Voice and take us through civic engagement. And he's already put together an incredible lineup for conversation.
Well, we're working on it. Going to have Ann Hillerman, who took over writing the Leaphorn and Chee novels, and Manuelito. They added that to the billing. But the Navajo police crime detectives, I had her on years ago when I was guest hosting another show, and she's got 10 books. She was just undertaking writing after her father, Tony Hillerman, passed away. She's got 10 books.
She's up to 10.
Under her belt. So wanted to talk to her, and in line with the theme of Tuesday's civic engagement, part of the conversation will be on how she and her father have helped give voice to the Navajo people and help them tell their stories. Yeah, so it should be really neat, and we'll get the rest of the show fleshed out in short order. Looking forward to it.
It's one thing I feel very comfortable, Matt, is turning the show over to you and BBG. He'll be taking a show later in the month.
Oh yeah,
The month as well. You guys are more than capable of improving this show on a daily basis. Sounds to me like you got a lot of books to read. 10's a lot. That's a lot of writing. It's going to be a lot of reading, and you got to go there. So I teased up something right before we came back, and that was something that is absolutely critical to the state of Arizona when it comes to the Central Arizona Project and the water that we get off of the Colorado River. The current agreement expires. The upper basin states have been dug in on their position and what they want. The lower basin states are trying to be creative, trying to offer some things up. There is actually money in this year's budget. I honestly don't know if it's in the final Senate budget that was going to give $1 million to Tom Buschotsky and ADWR in case we need to take legal action against the Bureau of Reclamation. But President Trump just appointed a gentleman named Ted Cook. to be the new chief of the Bureau of Reclamation. Why is that important for us in Arizona? Well, Ted Cook used to be the general manager of the Central Arizona Project.
Ah.
So back when we went through the first drought contingency plan, I had the honor, I guess it was the honor, Governor Ducey was upset that we had complained from SALC so loudly about no Southern Arizona representation on some of these water discussions. So he said, all right, Ted, you're it. I'm going, I don't know that much about water. You're it. Make it happen. So I've still serve on the ARC, or the Reclamation Committee, Arizona Reclamation Committee, that deals with this. Ted Cook was the general manager back in those days, and he's been working and advocating on behalf of Arizona. Now, he's going to have a different view. I mean, everybody who takes a new position, he's got to look at the CAP and the Colorado River and anything that the Bureau works on a national basis. But to me, it sends a message. President Trump understands the importance of Arizona specifically, as we are the junior partner of the lower basin states. He understands the importance of the ag industry in Arizona, the importance of the ag industry in California. Nevada gets a much smaller water footprint, and they're okay on it. But this is critical for Arizona and the future in our water. If we're going to continue to function as we are, you know, we've had some things come out of the legislature this year, which we maybe can talk to Senator Leach about, and he's on his way in. But that was a big move, and it kind of went under the radar. I'm sure the upper basin states are scratching their head going, what? But I think it basically, the one thing about President Trump, everybody knows, what is he? He's a negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
He's a businessman. He wants to cut deals. And I think by naming Ted Cook as the lead of the Bureau of Reclamation, he's just sent a message to the upper basin states. It's time to come off your stance of, we don't need to change. We don't have a problem. Because they don't. They don't use as much of the water of the snowpack. You know, they've got a couple reservoirs up in the upper basin, specifically in Colorado. They're very controlling on Lake Powell because they've kind of got control of that still. And then it gets down to Lake Mead. We've seen the water levels drop significantly. However, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've kept water in Lake Mead. So Lake Mead's actually up. We got mm-hmm. out of the tier one water shortage.
Mm-hmm.
The briefing I got on the ARC the other day said almost 100% guaranteed we'll be back to a tier one water shortage in 2026.
Okay.
Thus the importance of renegotiating how much every state is allowed to use, and more importantly, how much water must flow from Powell to Mead every year.
Mm-hmm.
So Ted Cook could be a good thing for us. And I do think the president was sending a message.
Well, perhaps you can have him on. I don't know what his availability to be to chat with about these things, but you know, we've had a couple of years where they, you know, I've seen stories that they've gotten decent snowpack, you know, way up the Colorado River, not, you know, not in the Phoenix Mountains, like,
right.
You know, which doesn't always make such a big deal, but certainly the further up in the Colorado River system, that's where you want the dense snow. So
don't fool yourself. It's the snowpack in Colorado that makes the difference.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And because of some of the fires, and so now you've got ground that's sucking the water.
Sure,
the
water runs off of the ash a lot more quickly, which is not good.
Correct. And there's two things that are important to us on that: the amount of snowpack and then the amount of water that comes down into the river system from the snowpack. And we saw a significant drop this last year. Last year was not a good snowpack, particularly. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't good. And the water that's coming down into the system, it was even worse. So it's not looking good for next year. But again, a lot of this is just negotiation on how much comes out of the lakes, how we manage it. There's a lot, I've said for a long time, the United States as a country, we don't have a water shortage. Do we have one here in Arizona? Yeah, we got water issues, but it's all about water transportation. How do we move the water that we have in this country, and specifically for us in the Colorado River system, how do we move it around? Who uses it? How we release it, and what we do? We have to be good stewards of water. No doubt about that. I think reclamation is reclaimed water is the key to our future and our willingness to use reclaimed water. So we'll see where we go with that. But that was a big one. So Vince Leach should be pulling into the parking lot any minute now. So why don't we go ahead and cut to a break? That way we will be able to take him all the way to the end of the hour when he comes back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Taking Ted back to Southern California in Century City.
There we go.
Morning Voice will be right back.
All right. Now you're throwing me back to high school, Matt. That was definitely getting me there. So that, this is good. And for those of you on Facebook, apparently the music doesn't come through on that, but he was just playing Refugee by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Well, it's I guess if we wanted the music to come through, Senator, you would need to sing, because I'm not. That's a true statement. So welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. 5 days of the week, five different hosts, five different shows. Tomorrow, make sure to tune in with Grant Krueger. As Grant always does, he will spin together a food for thought, which you could be talking about restaurants and you could be talking about politics. But now we're going to do a little political conversation. So we've been joined by State Senator Vince Leach, who is my senator, representing LD 17. And sir, thank you for joining us today. And you've spent a long time up in the legislature, both this year, literally still kind of.
We thought
you signed. He died on Friday, according to the president. But
we haven't.
But he's already backing off. We thought that was kind of unique.
Effective 12:01 a.m. This is Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't sign. He died because the House has to accept it, and by not accepting it, we are automatically back into session.
Since we've got you for a full half hour, I want you to talk a little bit about what happens at signee die, because I've heard from several members that is a big moment of finishing the session, and there's, I won't say ceremony to it, but there kind of is. It is.
First of all, you get the motion, which is kind of mundane. You get a motion to signee die, which only means we're going to adjourn without date certain, but the date is always certain because we know when they're coming back in January. But that's literally what it means in whatever language it is, probably Latin. Yeah. And there's normally a cheer that goes up from both sides because we're done. We're done fighting. All the bills, everything that you worked on that didn't get across the finish line
is done.
And so there are some that are very happy that some didn't go through, and there are some that are less than happy because their bills didn't make it across the finish line, or they were waiting in the other house and didn't get across the finish line, but for whatever reason, they didn't get across the finish line. Well, this year, those bills have been revived, at least Senate bills, because the Senate did sine die somewhere between 2 and 2:30 Friday morning.
Now, early. Was there a big yell at that point? Was there the usual greetings of each other, or did you all kind of know it really might not be done?
There was more from the left side, my left side, which is the Democrat side, and with the exception of two members, there was a cheer there, but it was kind of
muted.
Yeah, it was muted. It was like maybe more of a, I don't know if the radio people could hear that, but
sigh of relief.
A sigh that we're done. And then the president assigns a committee to go over to the House, and the House had already adjourned. In fact, they are adjourned until Monday. But in normal times, the committee would go over to the House. That's kind of a big deal because you're in the back of the room, you're introduced, and you walk up the middle of the aisle and everybody's shaking your hand and slapping you on the back, and you announce that the Senate has finished their business and ready to call it a session. And the House does the same thing.
Yeah.
It comes over, and then we're done.
And I heard some, now you can tell me if this is just a rumor, but I heard a lot of times, obviously, there's a little bit more of camaraderie, you know, talking with those of the other party. We'll see you next year. You know, it's been good. I've got, you know, and then you kind of go out into the courtyard in between. If anybody hasn't been up to the state legislature, Senate's on the south side, the House is on the north side, and you come out into and you just see more interaction at that point. And it's the fact of the matter is, you know, at this point, you might not see each other till next January.
Well, and that's true. I've never gone out in the courtyard because it's normally, unfortunately, it's always in the middle of the night. I think only one day in all the 9 years that I've been up there.
Because it's all about the budget. You got to negotiate the budget till the wee hours of the morning.
And you're done. And you're just, you're expended.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, there is that feeling. And normally, more so in next term than this term, but in next term, there'll be a lot of people termed out, a lot of people not coming back to the Senate, maybe going back to the House, maybe going out to a real life, doing whatever. And there's a lot of thank yous that weren't thank yous 20 minutes ago when we were voting on bills. But there's a lot of, there can be a lot of emotion there. Yeah. And typically, for those of us that had been putting in, especially on budget, and we just want to go home, but everybody seems like they have to speak. They have to speak. And there is no time limit. There is in the House, but there isn't in the Senate. And they, you know, go on and on and on and on, which I guess is cathartic for some. But so in this case, in the Constitution, we, the Senate, can sine die, which we did, but the House doesn't have to accept it. 3 days. And it, as I said, 12:01 a.m. This morning, they had not accepted it. So that means effectively, well, we are back. We're back in session. And to that point, I will be in Phoenix tomorrow at 10 a.m. To be on the floor.
Lucky you. So the budget's the big issue right now. The Senate has passed. You passed a 17.6, and you were a no.
I was a no.
It was a bipartisan approval.
Bipartisan approval and a bipartisan
opposition.
Absolutely.
And now, today at 10 o'clock, appropriations in the House is going to hear what they're calling a skinny bill. Basically, it's a continuing resolution, which, for the record, and we'll get to that later, the governor's already said if it comes to her, she's vetoing it. Bottom line is January or July 1st is it. The government effectively shuts down if you don't get it done by July 1st. So first, why were you opposed to the budget that was negotiated by Senate President Peterson and maybe some more of the Senate leadership team and the governor? Why did you oppose it?
I will give you the short version first. It was a 7.9% increase in spending. If you watch the economy, if you watch what's going on in Washington, D.C., we don't know what's coming down as far as is cuts. The D.C. will call them cuts. We will know them as a shift, where they've shifted the cost to the states, particularly in SNAP benefits and particularly in Medicaid expansion. Those are two huge. I looked at a report yesterday that said if they do a certain thing, which is in the big beautiful bill right now, if they do a certain thing, it will affect Arizona to the tune of $3 billion.
Absolutely,
which
that's
is
true.
We don't have that,
right?
We don't even have that in a rainy day fund. So, I was a no. I think that's and then the next 2 years, there was a reduction in spending and then a small increase in spending. Secondarily, and this gets into the weeds a little bit, but if you look at the detail, they don't balance it. They didn't balance it on income money. They balanced on drug rebates that we get from the government, and they balanced it on revertments. What are revertments? Revertments are we allocate and appropriate money to XYZ agency. They don't spend it. It reverts back to the general fund. And so it was built on a house of cards, and I said that on the floor. That's the short story of why I'm against it. Additionally, we didn't do anything for the cops. We did nothing for Department of Corrections. They're 800 people short. We did nothing for them. We did nothing for critical access hospitals. Now, that has been put in. So have the cops have been put in. But there was nothing in there for those. There was is that music in the background?
Yeah, but keep going. You got another 30 seconds, okay. So you got time.
And so there were a number of things that five of us agreed had to be in the budget. And it didn't appear, and right down to the 11th hour, we were trying to negotiate and didn't get in, and so we voted no.
And when we come back at the top there, we'll talk a little bit more about the budget before we move on to some other topics. But even Senate leadership was involved in those no votes.
Yes, they were.
So
Yes, they were.
All right, that was the voice of Vincent Leach, State Senator from LD-17. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be right back.
The waiting is the hardest part, but you just got to wait through the news, maybe learn a couple of things. Morning Voice will be right back.
Welcome back. It was really nice to look up there, Matt, and see your bright, shiny face on Facebook as you were going through that.
And breaking the internet, huh?
And so those of you that came back to Facebook and saw me pointing it off in the direction to my left over here, that's what's pointing out to the senator where the cameras were and which ones that maybe if he wants to emphasize a point, he can stare straight at and get good and firm. That's Senator Vince Leach is with us this morning. Sir, again, thank you for joining us.
You
thank
bet.
You for all the service that you've given to the state and to your communities. Not always easy, and to your country. So, you donned your U.S. Army veteran hat to come in today.
Go Army.
So before we go back to the budget, I don't think I've asked you yet about your thoughts on Iran.
Oh, well, we've seen it. I forget who it was yesterday, or there was an article that I read that outlined going back several years all the attacks on America and American troops, not necessarily in the USA, but certainly around. And so it was time. And the fact that they've built up to the point where, they're, 80, 90% enriched, and they're just a step or two away.
Yeah, I think they're at 60% enrichment.
Okay.
90 becomes weapon grade.
And it's, I read last night, and I'm not in that area, so I'm going outside of, if I have any expertise, it's certainly not in this area, but 3% is typically what you use for civilian use. So there's no doubt. And they concealed it. It's underground. And they lost track of all the nuclear weapons.
Yeah. You don't bury something 300 feet under the ground unless there's a purpose
for putting
it down there. Now, we talked about it earlier on the show. We'll see what effectiveness the MOPs really had. But one thing's for sure, they definitely closed access to those underground facilities, if not get down into those facilities. Take a long time to really do an assessment, from a military perspective, assessment of what it was. The bottom line is it's absolutely put their program on hold. Taking some step backs, and if the ceasefire agreement can hold and get some semblance, at least for a time period of order in that part of the world, I think in the long run it will make us a safer place.
There was an article that I didn't read this morning that said Trump was very upset because apparently both sides were breaking the
he might have even dropped an F-bomb in the press this morning.
It said something to that effect in the headline.
He was not a happy camper this morning, and at some point on my way in listening to an interview that was being done, he said, listen, I need to stop talking to you because I got to go make some phone calls. So we'll see. We know that President Trump believes in the negotiations, the art of the deal, and this was one. I was very clear this morning that I do believe the strike on the nuclear site was the right thing to do for a lot of reasons.
And I agree.
A lot of reasons.
The person that has a tear in the eye is Obama, because he built those with all the money he sent over there.
Yeah, it was interesting in the same conversation this morning, they were talking about the number of strikes throughout his time in office that President Obama also used. So there's a lot of people are screaming Congress should be declaring this. Well, it wasn't a war. It was the surgical strike.
Yes.
One time. And the president's already backing off about it. And it's, whether we like it or not, the idea of Congress declaring wars is not happened in decades.
So you were higher up in the military than I was. I was somebody that was told what to do. Anyway, can you imagine the planning and the detail?
Oh, it's incredible.
That went into that, and the intelligence that went into that, all the pieces that had to come together, and then keep it silent, and then pull off.
And the more we hear about it, the tactical deception of all the B-2s taking off to the west and then some of them turning east, because the ones that actually hit were the ones to the east. It's kind of like, look at here, look at here, look at here, and then they sneak in the back door. And to pull off a mission like that with the precision they did, precision weapons are obviously something that we've got down very well, but to pull it off successfully like they did is just another show of what our military force is capable of.
And we've reached our quota in people signing up for the military. We're over quota, right?
Yeah. We're not. There's not a problem for all in the last 10 years of my military career, and even since, you've heard all these things about the next generation, and one thing we have never slowed down on, the next generation is willing to stand up. When I joined the Air Force in 84, I didn't ever imagine that I'd be flying in combat or doing anything like that. The generation now that signs up, they know the probability of them going. I mean, 10 years ago, it was, yes, you're signing up, you're going to get trained, and you're going, and they knew that. They were still signing up. The young men and women that are growing up in our country believe in our country, believe in our democracy, our freedoms, our opportunities, and they're willing to serve. And we are at that point where we're not.
Well, General,
as
when I got my draft card and it was 1A, I knew I was going. I walked off the graduation stage, and less than 10 days, I was in the Milwaukee Induction Center, saluting and bending over and coughing and all those things you do.
And we've talked about it before, Senator, and you know that the Vietnam veterans that served when they were drafted and the country called upon them, and they said, yes, you asked me, I'm going. Those are the heroes that we need to understand. The change to a voluntary service, 100% volunteer service, is different, no less important and significant for those who are willing to step up and defend our country. But those Vietnam vets and the way you were treated when everybody from Vietnam came home, that, you know, I try, anytime I speak, try to make sure that you welcome the Vietnam vets home.
Go out of my way in airports.
Absolutely.
Anybody in uniform gets an attaboy.
Yep. So appreciate all that support. So back to the budget. You know, let's go back to Arizona. What's going on? So we talked about, you were a no on the budget through the Senate. It was literally, I don't know, you may have some insight on what senators were involved in the negotiations with Governor Hobbs, but the House will tell you they were never invited. They were never included. Right or wrong, that's the story they're sticking with. But it was real interesting because of the votes, the no votes that I think are important, and there were five Democrats, in order for this to pass, five Democrats had to come along with it and vote yes. So only five, but five came across, so that got it over the line. But there were six Republicans that did not vote no. And the ones that I want to take note of is both you and David Gowan.
Yes.
So two Southern Arizona legislators, both have served together for a long time. You're very close friends. And you both were solid no's, and you kind of outlined some of your justifications. The interesting thing, in Senate President Peterson's leadership team, you've got T.J. Shope, the pro tem, and then the majority leader and the majority whip, both the majority leader, Senator Shamp, and the majority whip, Senator Carroll, both also were no's.
Yes.
So even the leadership in the Senate was fractured on this. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. Lots of thoughts. This wasn't something that happened when we voted. You know, the vote on the, I forget what time the vote on the budget really started, but the general appropriations bill, which is typically either the first or the last, in this case it was the last bill, so it was around 1:30, maybe 1 o'clock, 1:30. It didn't all dawn on us at that time that we just happenstance were going to be a no vote. It actually started a couple days before when the budget came out, and we saw the numbers. And we saw, as I said earlier, we saw what wasn't in there.
Right.
We saw the increase, the 7.9% increase in a time of question as far as where is our economy going. And FAC, the Finance Advisory Committee, cut our forecast way back, and yet we're 7.9% increase. But additionally, the five of us got together and we said, something's not kosher here as far as is our what we'd like to see. And number one is our troopers. We've got areas in the state of Arizona that are not covered 24/7. If you're out in the country and have an accident, you may wait more than several minutes. It may be into hours before you get service. There nothing for our DLC.
Department of Corrections.
Department
huge.
Of Corrections. We've got a shortfall of people. We can't recruit. Plus, we have about 800 people right on the teeter-totter at that tipping point ready to retire. And this budget, will decide if they stay, because if they stay, they get more in their retirement. And then there was some other things in there.
So let me ask you about another piece of the budget that, and I'm curious because we have not talked about this, so I'm going to be asking you this question off. Part of the budget that the Senate was putting through was the one that gives $90 million to each House, and so into the House and to the Senate, to all the Republican legislators, and $90 million to the governor to spend or designate as will. Did that stay in the budget?
Not for me.
And my understanding, that was the question I was get to, is did any of the Republicans that vote no get assigned a portion of that $90 million?
Well, we were allocated it before, but as soon as we voted no, that money was gone. And
that's terrible.
And we had several amendments that came up, and if you were watching, you saw amendments on the floor.
Yeah.
And that was basically taking, and I hate to put it this way, but it's actually what it is, taking a piece of the pie and redistributing.
And they didn't just take it out and reduce the amount of the bill. They redistributed.
No, they redistributed.
That's terrible.
To people to wanted things. And dare I say, to some for the lobbyist community that were knocking on the door pretty hard. And I don't know what and where and why and how. I know the money got redistributed. I don't know the deals that were made to, because it all, that happened very, very fast.
So one last question before we go to break and bring in Kathleen Wynn, the chairwoman of the party. The skinny budget that they're going to try to pass, basically a continuation resolution, more or less. The governor's already said she's going to veto it if it comes to her. It is $600 million less than the current budget that the Senate passed. What do you see the next 5 days when you show up tomorrow? What do you see happening up at the legislature?
Well, it's going to committee. They're having rules this morning, right, after committee. As soon as the rules, every bill goes through rules to make sure it's proper and constitutional. And then it's going to go caucus. It's going to go to the floor. And so I would imagine by the time we get there tomorrow, it will have been transmitted to the Senate, we will vote on it tomorrow. I will be a yes vote because it's the best budget I've seen come down the pike. Even the first House budget was a little bit spendy, but it was still $300 million less than the Senate. Just sit down as you're having a coffee this morning and think about that. $300 million less. And this, as you pointed out, is $600 million. The taxpayers of Arizona should be glad that there's a budget coming forward. And if the governor vetoes it, shame on her. Shame on her. She does not have the best interests of the people of Arizona at heart.
Okay, that's a great way to finish with State Senator Vince Leach. I've asked him to stay around because when Kathleen Wynn joins us, we're going to talk a little bit about the 2026 elections and the need for recruiting candidates. And I know you're trying to do some of that up in LD-17 as well.
Sure, I am. Thanks for having me on.
Always enjoy it, Vince. Appreciate it. And we'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, Matt Neely, behind the glass. Appreciate you staying with us. We've been talking a lot of politics today, and it's not going to change. We've been joined by Kathleen Wynn, the chairwoman of the, I hope you go by chairwoman.
I go by chairman, but you can call me chairwoman. You can call me whatever you want. There's a lot of people.
Oh, don't say I can call you whatever I want.
Well, trust me, I've got some PCs that call me not things. So you can,
so the chair,
just not late for lunch.
No, I can miss lunch, but you can call me anything you want.
So the chair of the Pima County Republican Party, and I've asked her to come on today to talk about things that are going on in the party. Obviously, she's the host of Win Tucson, so she'll be back at 9 o'clock. But we've got her for about the next 20 minutes, and I've asked Senator Leach to stay around for one more segment. So one of the big roles of the party is recruiting high-quality candidates to run for office.
Absolutely.
So with regards to the state Senate, we just talked about the narrow numbers at the state legislature. So the Senate, the House in LD-17, you've got Kevin Volk, and full disclosure, I think Kevin has done a very good job in his first year on sometimes reaching across the aisle and doing some things. I think he recognizes that's the only way he's going to get anything done because of the majority. But that LD 17 is a solid red district.
Yes, it is.
And we've been fighting in challenges and battles and kind of a lot of inner party things going on there. Your role as the chair and attracting candidates for what's a very tight state to legislature, mm-hmm. what have you seen the last couple of weeks and going on, and do you see anything for LD 17?
Well, LD 17 should be a solid red district, and plus eight plus nine now.
Vince,
yeah, it's about eight and a half is the last numbers I saw.
Yes, and so we should win it handily. Unfortunately, last time, as we know, and nothing against Mr. Bulk, but he doesn't have the right letter after his name for my team. But he was single shotted, and so that split the vote between Corey and Rachel, and we lost a seat there.
Right.
Vince won by a very narrow margin, but I'm so glad that you're there, I wanted to say thank you for his vote on the budget because I agree with him. But we have to make sure that we continue to listen to what I live in LD 17, so this is my district, and that you represent me, and I think it's important that we listen to what the constituency wants and address their needs. And as long as the elected officials are doing that, I think then they will be reelected. I heard Kirk Filer maybe throwing his hand
for the House
in LD 17.
Yeah, don't come on the show and announce to Vince he's getting primary.
No, I would not.
I don't want to hear that.
Vince turned sheet white. No, just for the House. And I think we have to continue to field two candidates there. We can't concede that seat to the Democrats. And I appreciate that we could have some bipartisanship, but ultimately you want as many votes, because we see what happens if we don't have the votes, especially when we're so close in the House. So we want to get a bigger majority. I'm hoping this, although typically midterm elections aren't good for the Congress, I'm hoping though in the state of Arizona that we've gone really tired of the Democrat leadership in the state and we can change it.
So, Senator, I know you've been concerned and you've been talking to a lot of folks. What's your sense of members of the party, or just in general members of LD 17 or individuals from LD 17 who are willing
to step
up? Well,
first, I'd like to just follow up on what the chair lady mentioned about holding a majority, gaining a majority, and the person that's got a D behind his name that won the election. Yes, he did. He voted for the Diamondbacks yesterday, whenever it was. He voted for the Diamondbacks. He voted to help us get Axon across the finish line. So there have been votes where he's come across. The problem is when they go to caucus and when the first vote that you take after you're elected is for leadership of the House and leadership of the Senate. If you don't have the majority in the Senate and majority in the House, you lose leadership. If you lose leadership, you lose control of the House, you lose control of the bills, the flow of everything. That's why it's so, so important to have that type of margin. I saw this morning somebody on a national scene, not that it affects us and it's not in Arizona, but some lady was going to flip to be an independent, and she was going to caucus with the Democrats. And
was that flip from being a Republican to an independent caucus with the Democrats?
And then caucusing with the Democrats, you might as well have just gone and re-registered as a Democrat.
Exactly. But that throws the vote off when it comes back to all the votes are one thing or the other. We don't have that in Arizona, right. but you have to have that majority. Now, recruiting candidates, there are a couple of things that we have to do. First of all, and this is overall, and this will take time, we need to get the stain off of, everybody likes their representative.
Of course.
And their senator.
Their congressman.
Their congressman. Everybody likes them, but they hate the rest. I mean, I'll get good ratings. The Senate gets terrible ratings.
Right.
That's just, but the other thing is going out and trying to recruit people for $24,000 a year. is difficult to say, and particularly living out of county, living here in Pima, Pinal, or if you're living where Senator Gowan lives, you're staying away from home at least three nights a week, probably more, and that's a strain. So you're looking at a very select group of people that can financially afford to do it, or the other side of that, they're happy with $24,000 a year,
which may be the scarier of the two issues.
That is very, very scary.
So Kathleen, what have you seen since you've come on as the party chair? And where are you taking the recruitment?
So what we're looking for is people that have a commitment to uphold the Constitution, the rule of law, and support the Republican platform. That's like kind of where we start. But we're looking more for the caliber of the person. And I feel like our two city council people, Jay Tokoff and Janet Wittenbraker, are good representatives of the party, hopefully we fix that ward only thing in the near future. We're looking to be strategic about who we put in, but right now, if ever there was a time to show the failed policies of Democrat leadership, it's now. With everything they've done in terms of not funding police, all the things, the border's secure. We're starting to see the difference. And I think it's important to understand that there's a certain quality of life if you follow Republican policies and another. And if we're ever going to transition from what we currently have that's not working, and we can list all the problems, to another chance, this is that time. You know, and I think it's time to, people need to demonstrate that. We saw it with 414. Right? People are dissatisfied with the leadership. So if they're dissatisfied, that was the best poll we could have taken. So if you're unhappy, you don't have to keep voting the way you've been voting.
And that's the opportunity. And I'm hoping that we see more people want to step forward and do this. Mm-hmm. It's a big, to your mention, the funding and everything else, it's a big leap. So I want to thank Senator Vince Leach for staying around for one more session. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Kathleen Wynne about more ongoings in the Republican Party.
Great.
You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Appreciate you staying through the bottom of the hour. We've got to the chair of the Pima County Republican Party, Kathleen Wynne, with us, also host of Wynne Tucson. Any of your guests you want to tease for your show that starts in about 32 minutes or 20?
I was confirming as I was getting here. So we're going to do the mortgage update. We're going to talk about some administrators that didn't report sexual abuse, let teachers get away. We have over 20 victims. So some stuff that just we want to start to change in our state. Last night we had Ken Paxton in town. He's running for U.S. Senate from Texas. We don't have a Senate race.
So that's an interesting part of the role as the chair of the party, in this case specifically, is not just to support local Republicans, but if Republicans are willing to come into town, then you'll put the best step forward.
We've got many national people. I did this personally, though. There's a whole story behind that, but that's okay. people get upset.
Are you saying that there's some people inside the party that it just, we still don't have a big kumbaya, everybody getting along?
No, it's hard to lose. I try to lead by example, right? You know, we're supporting Juan and I were, you know, opposition to each other and we're getting along great. And so I think if you can step outside of your ego and just say, what are we committed to as a party? We're committed to registering Republican voters. We're committed to finding good candidates. We're committed to winning elections. That's what my job is. Now, you don't like how I'm doing it. You know, I got elected chair. I didn't think, you know, it was a very close race. I was as surprised as some of the other people in the room. But when it was all said and done, I have certain obligations and responsibilities. I got to do my job.
And Kathleen, my opinion is you've taken that on. I mean, you and I talked a lot about your race before and during running against Juan. But after when you became elected the chair, we talked, and it's very clear to me that that is your focus. You're taking on the role and responsibility for the chair.
We have to stop the petty infighting if we're going to be taken seriously by the business community in this county, in this state, in this
city. That's a great way to phrase it. The infighting doesn't help you with both the, you know, and people say, oh, we don't need the big donor base. Well, that's a stupid thing to turn your back on anybody. It's about trying to bring everybody in together.
And the problems we have are big enough for everybody. And yes, it's okay.
I think I did.
Here, I'll put my hand. Yeah. No, I think what we need to understand is what are our priorities? And if your priorities are to diminish your chair, okay, then that's your priority, but that's demonstrated. And that's not helping. But it's not going to deter me from doing the job. And at the end of the day, I'm going to fight for this Constitution, for this country. We're heading into the 250th anniversary.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I graduated in 1976 from high school, right? Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be my 50th high school reunion, which I'm so excited about. but at the end of the day, we have to do a better job as Republicans understanding what's important and what isn't. And this is, if you're doing this for ego or for attention, it's a bad job. We don't get paid anything. So you take a lot of incoming, but you have to give out more than you get. And that's what I try to do each day.
So one of the things you've tried to do is you've tried to get Republicans to run for all races.
Exactly.
For all races. So talk real quick about, and I know you've got an issue on the emblems. We want to make sure. So you're a professional and, you know, we got till 44. So I'll let you you work your time.
Okay.
CD7.
Yes.
We've got you've got some Republican candidates running in that.
Three.
In retrospect, it's a huge plus D.
It is.
What makes that, having candidates, important?
Well, it's important because we want to give people a choice. God bless Raul Grijalva. He was there 23 years. But it's all three ports of entry. We just secured the border. So why would you hand it back to the people that didn't want the border secure? We're trying to make our country safe. We look at what's going on in the world. Why, you know, this is a shortened term. Try us out. You know, like, let this be a test drive. If we don't do well, then you're going to have another election in a year.
That's real interesting. It is a shortened term. It's a one-year gig, effectively.
Yeah, let us be the warm-up band.
Let us be the warm-up band. Well, that's it. So, little different attitude right now towards the city council races. You believe there is some opportunity there?
Absolutely. I think I want to, you know, the mayor and the council really have demonstrated, again, it's about priorities. And I think 414 was a perfect example of people have had enough. We as Republicans knocked on Democrat doors, independent doors, which we typically don't do.
And I don't think by intention, you kept the party's involvement semi-
Yeah,
low,
we did.
Because you know the voter base.
Yes.
But you got the message out. You got the word out.
Almost to 70%. Yeah. So it's about messaging, Ted. It's about what do people care about and what are their priorities. And so as long as we stick to the people's priorities and turn down our politics, I am a proud Republican. However, in different settings, what are you committed to having happen? You don't have to wear that in all the time.
And I think that I haven't looked hard enough at the total breakdown, but I think you're going to find that even the Democratic voters inside the city of Tucson on 414 were pretty split.
Yes.
It wasn't, there's no way a 70% no vote could be carried by
We needed
all the
Democrats. And we want to work across the aisle. I've done, you know, when there's a problem, I've worked across the aisle. I've worked with Democrats. There was a time when it was okay to have Democrat friends, and I still do. So, you know, but here we go. You know, and so I think we have an opportunity in CD7, and we'll see. Right, we're going to know in September.
And in the city, do you have candidates running in all three of the wards?
We're still looking for a candidate. We have to have them in by tomorrow. Ward 5. We still have two interviews today. I am desperately trying to. If you're in Ward 5 and you're Republican, please call me. We want to have a full slate of candidates. We thought we had some and we didn't.
And so. I think there are some believers out there, despite the election system, that when the final between the general will be citywide, believe that there's an opportunity, maybe in Ward 6, depending who the candidates are.
And Ward 3.
And Ward 3, again, there's some potential.
What I like is we're trying to field every single slot. And we're doing that with good quality candidates. I'm really proud of who we've recruited, and J.L. Wittenbraker and Jay Tolkoff, and I think they would lead and be more moderate and work to change the dynamic in the city.
And to that point, that is a key point of that. The recruiting that you need to do. You have to understand the districts you're running in and you're looking for.
You want to serve the constituency that they're serving, and you have to be aware of what they stand for.
Right. And you're looking for those moderate Republicans. Now, I know there's also kind of an uproar about the envelopes.
Oh, yes. Okay. So in the primary, they've been trying to get this changed for the last four sessions in the legislature. And what has happened is when you turn in your primary envelope, and yes, I've gotten tons of calls, you have to write all your personal information on that outside. There's no envelope that it goes in. So people are upset about that. If you don't want to put it in the mail because the U.S. Postal Service scans every single letter that comes in, you can drop it off at the recorder's office. You can drop it off at drop boxes. I personally like to hand it to someone. When we get to the general election, whoever wins the CD7 Democrat side, whoever wins the CD7 Republican side, then they'll have a double envelope again. So we won't in the general election, but for this primary election, these envelopes are the way that they are, and your information is on there. If you don't want it to go through that system, you can drop it off. Don't wait till election day, though, to drop it off. Drop it off ahead of time.
So it's just in the primary.
Just in the primary.
There's no double envelope.
Right. And it's legal. So, yes, the legislature has not changed this. We need to get the legislature to change it, but they haven't done it.
So we've got about 30 more seconds before we're going to go to break, and then you'll go prepare for your show.
Yes.
Any last thoughts?
No, I want to say to people, we can all work together. I love Tucson. I came here in 1976. I want to see this city thrive. And we're working very hard to do that. And we've had a lot of Democrats show up because they're just disgusted with what's happening. We will welcome you. We want to serve you. And we want to make where we live the best place to live. And I want Tucson to just get a little bit more conservative.
Thank you for joining us, Kathleen. I really appreciate it. Go prep for your show. Hope everybody will stay with us through then. And when we come back, we're going to have Chris Cohen from RJP Estate Planning with us to discuss the importance of having a living trust. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, and Matt Neely, as always, thank you for keeping us on time, on target. Please tune in tomorrow morning with Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice for Food for Thought. He's going to have Frida Hunt, owner of Via Peru restaurant, for the first hour, and I think you're going to get some political conversation during the second hour. So, as always, please support The Morning Voice. We work hard to keep your drive time entertainment alive. Now I'm honored to have Chris Cohen from RJP Estate Planning with us. Today we're going to talk about something that hits home for just about all of us, how we continue to care for our kids, even after they've grown up and left the house. A recent survey by Pew Research says only 9% of adult children say their parents are too involved in their life. Listen to that for a second, parents. Only 9% say we're too involved in their life. This tells us that the majority of adult children welcome our input and help as parents. So my guest today is Chris Cohen from RJP Estate Planning, Arizona's largest and most experienced estate planning firm. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ted. It's great to be here.
Chris, we do so much for our children when they're young, packing lunches, helping with homework, driving them to practices, social events, as well as watching out for them. And for most parents, it's that instinct to protect and care for our children that never goes away.
Absolutely, Ted. And estate planning is one of the last and most important ways we can continue looking out for our family, especially our adult children, because unfortunately, too many parents unintentionally leave their kids with a legal and emotional mess when something happens to them.
And Chris, that's not just speculation, right? There's actually some real data behind that.
Yes. According to caring.com, 16% of adult children don't know whether their parents have an estate planning in place, and more than half don't know where the documents are or what's in them. So some think their parents are all set, only to find out, often after a medical emergency or their parents passing, that there was no plan in place at all, no living trust, maybe just a will. But for anyone in Arizona who owns a home or has more than $75,000 in personal assets, a will means the estate will go through probate court. Unfortunately, it's a situation we see all the time. Surviving family members call us asking for help when their parents didn't have a plan. By then, it's too late to help them keep their parents' estate out of probate. We need to set up an estate plan for the parents before they pass so their children can avoid this hardship.
So let's talk about that. What actually happens when there is no living trust?
It's eye-opening. Without a living trust, if you simply own a home or have more than $75,000 in personal assets in Arizona, your estate could get tied up in probate court, a public and often lengthy legal process. For the family, that means lots of paperwork, court delays that can drag on for months or even years, legal fees that could eat up into the estate and the children's inheritance, and most painful of all, family conflict.
And I can only imagine that after the passing, family conflict would hit the hardest during a time when the family's already grieving and needs to be together.
Exactly. Let me give you a real example of something that happened last year. A mother of three here in Arizona passed away unexpectedly. Her adult children assumed everything was in order, but there was no living trust, only a very basic will. The house had to go through probate court. It took over 14 months before they could even put their mother's home on the market. In the meantime, the siblings started arguing about who was in charge, what mom really wanted, and how things should be divided. Sadly, the stress tore their family apart. One of the siblings told me, "We spent more time in court than we did grieving together."
Wow, that's terrible and heartbreaking. But when parents have the right documents in place, this is avoidable, isn't it, Chris?
Totally avoidable. With a living trust, all of that could have been handled privately and smoothly without court involvement. And with clear instructions in the trust on how those assets would pass down, had the mom created a living trust and shared her plan with her three children, everyone would have been on the same page.
So what's the solution? What should families be doing right now?
The solution is creating a comprehensive estate plan, and the cornerstone of that is a revocable living trust. At RJP Estate Planning, we've helped over 40,000 Arizona families over the past 30 years put plans in place to protect what matters most. And for all of RJP's clients, there's comfort in knowing we offer free settlement support for surviving family members when the time comes. When the parents create a living trust with RJP, the surviving family members can call us when their parents pass. We will personally guide them through the process to settle their parents' estate and get their inheritance quickly and privately. And right now, for anyone 60 or older, we're offering a 65% off complete living trust package through June 26th.
And this isn't just a living trust, right? It includes other important documents?
Yes. The package includes a living will, so your medical wishes are known, a medical power of attorney, so someone you trust can make health care decisions if you're incapacitated, a financial power of attorney to ensure your bills get paid and your assets are managed if you're unable to do so yourself. It's a full plan to protect your health, your finances, and your family. And it's 65% off for those 60 or over.
Chris, this is a huge opportunity. I know many listeners have good intentions, but they haven't taken that next step. And this is your chance to finally get it done with RJP Estate Planning, who's helped over 40,000 Arizona families for the past three decades.
Exactly. You've protected your kids their whole lives. Now it's time to protect them from courts, delays, confusion, and conflict. Don't leave them guessing.
So what should people do if they want to get started?
Just call us at 520-441-4523 by this Thursday, June 26th. That's 520-441-4523. You'll schedule a no pressure, no cost consultation, and we'll walk you through everything you need to know.
Again, that number for RJP Estate Planning is 520-441-2523. Do this for your kids. Do it for your spouse. Do it for your own peace of mind. Call 520-441-4523 by June 26th to schedule your free consultation and secure your 65% savings on RJP's Living Trust Package. Chris, as always, I appreciate your time and insight today, and I look forward to having you on again soon.
Thank you, Ted. It was great to be here today.
All right, Chris, have a great week, and again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Matt.
Covered a lot of ground today, Ted.
We did. It was very interesting. A lot of
CAP, Iran. You solved the Middle East problem for us right here on the show.
That we did.
Juan Ciscomani.
If we only could have solved the budget process in our conversations with Senator Leach, that would have been great. We could get an Arizona budget passed.
Congressman Juan Ciscomani, Vince Leach, Kathleen Wynne, chairperson of the Pima County Republican Party. Covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, and you know what?
We even had time to talk. She's on the news at least once a week, maybe twice. So she is out there being a good spokesman for the cause.
Oh, that's absolutely the truth. And you know, I know there's some inside the party that still argue and fight about what should be done. But I think her attempts to try to bring the party together for the Republican side of the House is going to be a benefit in the long run. But you know, Matt, I always appreciate the time we have to chat on some of the issues. I thought you had some great insights, some great opinions. And hopefully we'll start building a little more time in the show for us and the listeners at some point to start calling in and getting engaged. We appreciate all they do supporting the Morning Voice. So I appreciate everybody for listening to us today. Next week, Matt Neely will be the civic engagement voice during this Tuesday 7 to 9 o'clock hour. I encourage you all to tune in. I will be listening from abroad, and remember, 10:30 The Voice, your station for trusted local news and talk. Everybody have a great week, including you, Matt.
Thanks, Ted. You too.